So what happened here? Oscar, you were here on time. Ready? With a pen? Okay. What happened after we came, Errol and I? Anybody paid attention? To here. Yeah. No, for this workshop.
You asked me what I did at the station, and you asked Granny D about her walk.
Exactly. I had one of the most interesting conversations. Granny D was here. She was telling us all about evaluating the effect of her national organizing. With her own words. What was everyone else doing? Their own thing. That's the first thing to remember about live events coverage. You go in waiting for a story that you decided you're going to do. And there's not another story that might be much more important happens oftentimes just next to you. And you miss it. Because it's not what you set out to do. And it's a very important point as community journalist and grassroots radio journalist to remember. Be the ears and the eyes of your listeners. And don't have so many preconceived ideas. Observe the site. You might find much more than what you thought you would find there. And this was one example. She's gone now. It's too late. I wasn't even rolling tape, which is my own doing as well, except for the video. So we have some of that conversation, but she wasn't mic'd. Hello.
Well, hi. I'm Errol Maitland, and you're?
Reem Katkhoda.
And there's a microphone right
there.
Please
pass it on.
John Hamilton from Madison and WRT and Workers Independent News Service.
I'm Eleanor Ostrinsky from Brooklyn, and I do stuff on Brooklyn College Radio.
Elizabeth Robinson from KCSB and from MARC.
I'm Ben from CKET in Montreal.
Danielle Shenoweth from WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. And the Urbana Independent Media Center.
I'm Christy Lloyd from Tucson, Arizona at KXCI.
Oscar Garcia, KCSB, Santa Barbara.
I'm John Eichenhauer, and I'm from KZMU in Moab, Utah. And we'll be hosting this event next year, so.
Let's get closer.
Yeah, because it's going to be a little bit difficult for the microphone to.
So what's live events? What are the live events that you have been covering or you'd like to cover?
Well, because I do labor news, and because we have a national focus, you know, they're always popping up everywhere. Right now, obviously, our attention is turned to the West Coast and the dock workers, the ILWU. George W. Bush has threatened to bring in the Navy to replace them and just pull out all the stops and use the excuse of Homeland Security to break a strike. But that's certainly a live event going on now. But there are so many other stories. It just seems like... It just seems like there's an endless parade of them, and you get to reach out and grab just one or two of a million stories on a daily basis, and you just want to reach for... You know, the best one.
No, just. So, I asked about live events. You talked about a protest, a strike, and you talked about stories. What else would you have that you think is a live event that needs coverage?
That needs coverage?
In your neighborhood, yeah.
It's not what I do, but if you want examples of things that need covering, I'll give you a couple. One is there's a lot of day labor in our area, and places where day laborers stand each morning and get picked up to do gigs, mostly in agriculture. And the police are they've defined a space in which they can stand. And the police have been doing these stings, which are really, I forget the the legal term, entrapment, where they'll pretend to be employers, and they'll entice people to come around the corner to talk to them about work, and then they bust them.
So notice, the most important point is the content that drives the concept. Go on.
I was just going to make a wise crack.
So we all know about life events being content. That's not so hard to figure out. The other part that I would like us to cover here is it's also in categories. And there is technology and preparation that will be pretty different depending on the category of live events. You're going down to cover a protest of labor strikers and strike busters. It's a whole different story than to go cover a live event of inauguration of a hydraulic dam that is going to empower a community radio station. It's different than the challenge of us trying to cover that. People still, radio people, talk off mic. The technology is such an intrinsic part of getting it. And we're going to cover that as well.
One of the issues, I like to cover live events. I like to bring a story in that is live and direct. I like the feel and the texture of catching something as it's happening. But what are the elements that really, I don't know, make it sounds live and good and exciting to the people at home who are in their car, who's listening and who isn't at the scene? How do you bring that home? What value does it have? Well, and in fact, does it have a greater value than going out, recording it, and then cutting it down and playing it? Or does the story lose any of its value if you record it and play it back live and direct, or not live any longer, but play it back in its actuality as you captured it a day or two or a week later? What do you think?
Well, I think the surrounding sounds is very important. First part of your question. For my community, is I don't have a lot of live incidents, so to speak, but I have a lot of situations that can be captured and replayed on air. One of the things that we do live every week is we broadcast the city and county building the meetings. So that's probably the thing that we do live every week.
For the purposes of what I do at the station or what I did last year, I found it important to put what you're covering live when you're on the air in the right context for the listeners so that they can understand it.
As far as to find something that's exciting live to listen to, I'm just trying to think of what would... You would almost... There would have to be an inherent conflict of ideas, whether it's just inferred or in actuality, you know, where if it's not in actuality, then making sure that what you are showing, that there can be another perspective, another take on it. And maybe that's the kind of thing that you have to bring to it yourself if it's already not a part of what's happening. I don't know, I'm just thinking out loud, but just as far as what would make it exciting and interesting, that would seem to be something that would be important. I don't know.
Any other ideas, any other elements you want? Anyone else want to share?
I have this fantasy that there's like a hero, that hero journalists, which is what I'd like to become, but don't feel like, are people who are so good at thinking on their feet They never have to pre-produce anything. They save a lot of time because they kind of carry their skills around with them. And so when they are reporting on something, like if you go down to the docks, John, and you're reporting on this, the ideal, you know, a hero journalist would be somebody who would be able to go down and get content and really not have to mix it down at all. Like, just know how to get the information right then and there and ask the right questions and do it in the right way that you wouldn't have to go back. I feel like I spend my whole life, you know, taking content that's lots and lots of raw footage and just trying to make it into some elegant architecture, you know, and I would like to get to the point where I learn how to think on my feet. For example, I'd really like to know how to report on the ground from a protest, because I feel when I'm at a protest, I feel like I'm a piece of meat on the street and everybody else is a piece of meat on the street, and then the cops are going to come beat the meat up. But you know, it's like, here we are and it's an undifferentiated mass of human beings. And what I want to be able to do as a reporter is to show people who are seeing this undifferentiated mass of people on the street, like to pull out and show the individuality and the different voices of this. And I don't know how to do that. I really suck at doing protest reports. So any thoughts would be great.
Beautiful. Just hold this thought. And can somebody write these few incredible words? Raw, elegant, think on your feet, whatever, a piece of meat in front of the cops, and the individualistic different voices. Also write perspectives, that was dropped before, and let's hold this thought for a second. They asked Picasso how easy it was to paint. He says, really easy. They said, wow, this is amazing. Did you prepare for that? He says, all my life. And the best journalist in reality spent a lot of time preparing to cover a live event live. They could also cover an event live, but that's a different story. Errol talked about methodology of how to produce the live events. We'll go into that as part of our coverage of live events. When there's a story happening that you know about, because as I've just demonstrated in the beginning of this workshop, there are stories you prepared for, and there are those that just happen in front of you that you could capture. When you prepare to cover live events, there is a big chunk that has to do with programming, with management of how you're going to cover it, with the technology, with the equipment, with yourself, what's in your purse, what's in your pocket, how you're dressed, your attitude, background information on the event that you know is going to take place. Hopefully you would have identified the key players in that matter, and this could take a lot of months. Sometimes people didn't just walk to Seattle and did the, yeah, some did, but a lot of the coverage that also we play again and again and is played at the universities had to do with the fact that a lot of people read a lot, talked a lot, networked a lot internationally. When we went to Beijing to do the Women's Forum in 1995, people took a train so that they'll have enough time together to work the issues. And the best journalist rode with them. Some reported on that trip. In reality, it was all preparation to report on the Beijing Platform for Action. Why do I say, oh, there are all of these different components? Because like Errol pointed out, methodology. Are you going to capture the different sound, texture, versus content, versus the storytellers, which other people call informants? Shows you the relationship to the matter. And produce it afterwards to make it what we have been brainwashed to believe is elegant because it's slick. Or bring it raw, which oftentimes also in our training, because after all, we get trained watching the TV. What is happening in front of us that is uncensored is raw. And the raw concept is something less of the elegant. And I'm sure Errol, we're going to talk to us about that, the type of reporting and the attitude and the relevance of what is raw versus sometimes the impact and the compacting of what is pre-produced. The preparation. I've talked about the conceptual preparation, right? The research, the reading, the identifying of the players, having their contacts, seeing if they're going to be at that rally, at that protest, at that strike, at that inauguration. And there are the equipment preparation and your self-preparation. But one thing I forgot to have us touch on is continue with the types, the categories of live events. Each time I had asked what are the type of live events, I was hit with stories and content, because that's how we think. In reality, as a program director will tell you, and a station manager, if there was one around here, there's a different approach. It's pretty much the same preparation and pretty much very close to the same thing, a strike, a protest, a rally of a certain thing. A teaching becomes different. I mean, sorry. What I meant is a labor strike versus irresponsible globalization protest versus a student uprising is the exact same thing in many ways, slightly different in others. But the categories are the rallies, the protests, the teaching, and what else?
Music.
Sports.
Sports.
Press conferences.
Tragedy. And tragedies. Capturing them live would be very interesting. Live broadcasting them. Guess, yeah, social tragedies. Yeah.
Well, now, I don't know. Let me then take you through some of the work that I have done and my approach to it. One of the things that I do like to cover is either student demonstrations or community demonstrations or police brutality marches. I've done that a lot. I've also done events where it was necessary to get the media to come in to cover the event from the community perspective. And on that issue, I want to take you back to maybe 1981, 82. I don't remember what year. Maybe it was 1981. No, it was 1980. Edward I. Koch was the mayor of the city of New York. He was in office. We had just gotten back from some successful takeover of the City University of New York, where we shut it down. And I was one of the individuals who was involved in that. So at the place I was staying one night, these two women came to me and they said, we have a situation here where we have a child health station at the Polo Grounds, and the mayor wants to shut it down. And we need your help. Now, I just came off a long campaign. I'm tired. I'm resting. But they came to me and they says, we want you to do something. So I said, all right, talk to me later. The next day they came back and say, we're ready to go. Went down to the center. Got the keys. So happens from the guy who is the regional director. It's 20 years now, so I can tell this part of the story that has basically been left untold. Now, this is a story that prior to that had noticed in the paper. And people had met on this issue in this story. And it was a fait accompli that these child health stations would be closed down by the mayor. When we did our research by simply talking to the regional director who the media talked to before and, you know, never got the story that these clinics were profitable institutions. They paid for themselves. and they didn't cost the city a dime. There were also something that were in place for 60, 70 years in New York City. New York City being one of the places that pioneered what you could call social medicine when they created Bellevue and the other poor hospitals, alongside with the religious institutions who ran most of the hospitals and the homes of charity where they take care of babies and other people who were indigent. And along the way, I guess some universities came along and went in to use these hospitals as teaching facilities. The city, in order to deal with the epidemic at the time, primarily if Europeans who were coming over created these health stations for babies. And you could take your child there and it wouldn't cost a dime to be treated. If you have insurance, they would take the insurance. If you had Medicaid or Medicare, whatever it was, the program they created for young people or people who were poor income. Medicare is for seniors, right? Medicaid is for poor people that the state would reimburse the city, and they would reimburse them sufficiently that these health stations were not a drain on the budget. We got that information. So two women decided that they were going to do some organization the day the police was coming to close the place down, and the director came down, gave us the key, and we went in and we decided that we were going to secure the space, and we're going to secure it in the name of the community and for the community. We had access to WBAI radio in New York. We also gained access to the mainstream media. And we did that by calling 911 and said, hey, there is a takeover of the community center. And it's been taken over by a group of mothers and children. And they have locked themselves inside of the place. So, the story shifted from the perspective of the mayor closing down the health centers for whatever the reason that he gave at the time, to one now where we were grounded in the story where it was the activist parents, or just plain old women, because that's who they were, who had babies. And the center was going to be taken away from them. It was going to be taken away across the city, but they decided to start at the Polo Grounds in Harlem. And so when we called 911, then we knew that WINS would respond. And working in the media and developing some press contact, we were ready to give them a story. Because, you know, 22 minutes we give you the world. And we had our sound bites ready. And so they got the story first. They broke it. They did the sound bites. It was authenticated because the police had been called and they got it on their scanner. And we got on the news. Our angle, our perspective. Then we called WBAI. Okay, 279-3400 was the number at that time. And we got on the air, again, telling the story from our point of view and doing something very tactically, which you can do on WBAI. We have a bunch of women locked up inside a health center. You heard a little bit about it here today. We need people from the community to come down to protect these women and to defend it from the outside. And we began to put the city through the paces, through the legal steps, with them having to go to court and get injunctions and get judges to do the relief. And one of the things that we were doing at that time was we had Robert Knight, who played the relief, the police with the bullhorn, reading us the riot act live and direct on the air. To make a long story short, we were able to hold on to that center for 2 long weeks. In the meantime, we were negotiating with the mayor and his assistants, and we were able to get him to back off from closing that center. That was one of the few victories that we had against Edward I. Koch. Other women around the city organized in their community, and today they are still free child health stations in the city of New York. But we were able to tell the story and get it out from the perspective of the community. The next time we took over an institution, it was City University of New York, City College. And we planned that step by step by step. And we took over City. We had our issues laid out clearly, drawn up, and we were able to make our cases to the conventional everyday press in New York. And we were able to do that for about 2 weeks until the media began to shift the spin on the story. That is when I made the decision as a media activist, a community activist, because I was hired by the student government at City College to do community outreach work for them, that we had to make it another transition to go into WBAI and commandeer some airwave so that we can control the messages and the perspectives of how stories are told. And that's just 2 examples. We did the same thing with the local school board. We did it taking control of a radio station just for 30 seconds at a time, a minute at a time, through access to call in, through access to the news reporters, to get information out that they were trying to pick a superintendent in the schools, and we need to change the votes of a few people to get a superintendent that was suitable to the community, but not suitable to the Board of Education. They say people don't go to Parents Association meeting. We were able to just simply making phone calls on talking shows, getting parents to write press releases and tell their stories and sending notes home to their kids, get several hundred people out to the school to go to the election, to go to the meeting, and change the minds of their people who sit on the school board so we could elect a superintendent suitable to the community.
So what we notice here as the reason why we do media is very relevant. And that's something we got to think about for every story, I will say. What made their actions so successful is they knew what they were going, they knew the technology, and they knew the system. And that's extremely important. What was the technology? Phones. Simply phones. For something jumping that fast, whose impact was so crucial, all they needed were phones, phone numbers, and the knowledge that if you call 911, it'll get picked up on the news. So to remind you that as community reporters to cover live events, what you always will have on you is hopefully your eyes, your ears, and your mouth. Few quarters help a whole lot because cellular phones sometimes don't work. Cellular phone is the next upscale. I was able to report on Al Sharpton's result of the no shopping till no profit, no justice, till from the courthouse, though they take your recording equipment when you go into the courthouse. Because I had my cellular phones, and when they came out, I was able to interview the lawyer, Al Sharpton, the 41 people that came from across the country to support this action. That's one. The second thing, the preparation beforehand. Here, they jumped into it, they happen to know because it's their beat. You sometimes might decide in your radio stations that you'll have different people that know about different things and to dispatch them for that because they already have the knowledge. Otherwise, you set up a system in which you will listen. One type of preparation that we, I think, can really upscale in all of our radio stations is the long-term preparation. In reality, also what I said is to be able to do the type of coverage of Seattle that the team of Democracy Now! did and others from WBAI, it took many, many months, if not years. What did it take? A relationship with all these players that organized Seattle. A system in which the information will be fed from the community. Today, it would entail, of course, everybody knowing your email and a person servicing this email. This is what radio stations need to set up to really be capable of properly covering live events. Or producers, your beat is labor, your beat is youth, your beat is gay issues. Connect to these other people. Because you know what really makes us relevant as community reporters is not our voice. It's the fact that we are this door, this open, this channel of the community. But we need to bring them in, not just as talent, but as people who will tell us what is the story. And that's the other very important point to remember from Errol's story. They knew and they had the access so that they could. WBI had opened up access to these organizers so the story could be told from them directly on the air. So as a media reporter also of live events, you need to remember to give this transparency. Hold your cellular phone as you introduce the piece and the person. Let them sum up the issue. Let them sum up the reactions. It makes it much stronger. So that's the simple methodology on site. The preparation, as I said, is having all these relationships with the people of the community that you're supposed to represent and a very keen knowledge of yourself in your mind and your radio station's mission or your organization or your production's mission of why is it you're covering this live event. Just write it down for yourself. Think it out, whatever works for you. And keep your eyes on the prize as you collect the components. Another type of preparation is your equipment. Few quarters, a pen, a paper, comfortable clothing if it's a street event, a press conference and a conference and a teaching. What do they have in common? They're in a controlled environment. While a street rally and a protest is jumpy, you could be one of them if you're not dressed, badged, and clear. And sometimes you might not want to be mistaken for one of them. We'll talk about that in a second. Press conference coverage, rather simple. You get a fax, you get an email, you get a phone call, you know what's going on. What do you do?
You go. You go with your equipment and The first thing you do is go. If it's really a press conference and not just hype for something, which they often are. And I would say, like any place else, you test your equipment on site so you get decent sound rather than just testing it in your office or wherever you are.
Excuse me to disagree very, very, very much. And that's if you only remember this one point, it'll be great. Both the things you said are very important. A couple of things need to happen before. Because you're going to go get the best sound you can and to bring it back. You need to make sure it is happening. There are a couple of phone calls. There are a couple of facts. United States agencies send you press releases a whole lot of time if you're a radio station with enough listenership. You got to check the facts on the press release before you hit the ground, if you can. Otherwise, afterwards, but definitely if you can beforehand. Call the contact. Talk with your colleagues. See if the story is really like it's told in the press release. Check your equipment. and collect it before you go. Because if you're there in the middle of the heat covering a 94 people arrest demonstration for Mumia Abu Jamal in Philadelphia, and you run out of battery and it's the only batteries you have, you're not as effective as if you had taken a minute to check on the press release, when does it really start, check to see if it's starting on time, and taken the time to bring an extra battery.
I don't think we're disagreeing. You just, yeah. I think it's important. No,
you said check on site, absolutely, but check beforehand,
yes,
if you can.
You got to do both. You got to do both. There's also something else that you need to do. We talk about the site, and there's some areas that I want to broaden this discussion into, about community having access, because I started talking about being a media activist or knowing media. See, I started to learn the nuts and bolts of telling your story from high school, when we as students staged a strike against the teachers who had a strike and had to be brought into the negotiations. And I learned how to do, public relations and media outreach, which is something a lot of people in communities don't know how to do. So we don't get their stories, and that's why they go unreported, or we only hear the stories from the perspective of the city officials or the governmental officials or the corporations. You ever notice that when a corporation is introducing a new movie, a new book, or a new model of a car, that how far in advance they tell you about it? 6 months in advance they tell you about the preparation, how much paper they send you, how many people call you, they invite you to a preview of their event, they'll even fly you out, they make it easy for you, and so when the big day comes, and you go out and you cover the official launching of the movie, the product, or whatever, that they were getting press on it all along, and this is just the formal piece. Well, people in the community don't have that. They don't have the people necessarily to escort you around and take you around to show you what the sites are. You, however, should know that these things need to happen. So one of the things that I always do when covering an event from the community perspective is to find somebody who knows the terrain to be your guide, to guide you. Okay. One of the things I did at the health station was to find, or I was found by the people who knew the landscape, take me around. So I had the background on the information. When I go out to cover a demonstration, same technique, involving the police or a funeral or whatever, and we've covered a lot of these mass demonstrations, is that we know the route or we know not the route. And I have more intelligence and more information than the police, because I make sure, if I'm coming out to cover your event from your perspective, that you are there to be my guide, to take me around, and to vouch for me. Okay? And that happens, because sometimes we go on demonstrations and they are plans that the police don't know about. Well, something else I also do is that I have to find out where the police are and what's their mindset. So you always scout, if you're going to cover a demonstration, the neighborhood. Quarter mile around, you find out from people, where is the police precinct, where are their staging grounds, large field, back alleys, other roads, other places, top rooftops, tops of buildings. Okay, so you walk around, you just don't go into a situation not knowing what it was. Now, I know that the police was going to riot at the Patrick Dorsman funeral because before we got there, we were in contact with the organizers that Reem was dropped off some 20 blocks away from where the events were going to be taking place. The crowd had her up on her shoulder, and I scouted the entire neighborhood and knew that there were police officers dressed as janitors or sexed in the churches where they didn't belong. I knew what the color of the day was, and I knew where they were, and I knew that they were a large formation, that it wasn't just simply for a funeral. I also knew that there were undercover agents within the crowd, and I also knew, don't ask me how, that they were going to be mass arrests that the folks at City Hall had ordered even after the demonstration had broken out. In addition to that, when I talk about people vouching for you, there were people out there in the community who knew who I was and they were familiar with us. Now, when you're good at doing live demonstrations or live coverage from the community perspective, there is one loyal audience that you have. And I'll just tell you a quick story before I shut up. There's this gentleman who I was in conversation with recently, and he was telling me how great my station was. Because he was, a couple of years ago, at an anti-Castro demonstration in New York City at the United Nations. And because he was at an anti-Castro demonstration at the United Nations in New York, he was talking to the police. And they were talking about what radio station they listened to. Because the people at that radio station, they knew every move that Fidel Castro was going to make and basically everything that was planned. So it has, you know, it cuts back and forth because we have the trust and the confidence of the people with whom we are working and whose stories that we're telling. So I feel that when we go out and do a story, it is pretty thorough, and it's pretty complete. Most of the media, and you need to observe them, who they turn to get their story from, is either the one loudmouth on the corner, or they turn, and it might as well be a police informant, or they turn to the officials with whom they're comfortable in working and getting the story, especially when they are under deadlines. So with some preparation, you can come back with a different angle and a different story that may even win you an award, or at least will win you the praises of the people, I think, whom your radio station should be serving. Normally people who are not satisfied with what they're getting from the mainstream press.
So making this phone call about the contacts on the press release makes an introduction of you to the people and them to you. You get to talk with them. Well, who's really going to speak? What is that? When do you think, you know, I should arrive?
Press release?
No, we talked about the press conferences.
Press release?
We talked about press conferences before.
Did you get a press release from Seiko Diallo?
Just
from the Ahmed Diallo family. Did you get a press release Colin? Did you get a press release from Malcolm Ferguson's mother?
No, that's a different event.
Okay.
And that's a different event. And that's why we talk about categories. The press conference, they've sent you a fax. There is a phone number on it. Not always, sometimes, often. You want to check to make sure that they didn't make a typo in the address because, you know, you can often arrive to the wrong place, especially when it's a hot issue. So it makes a whole lot of sense. It makes an introduction. Errol talked about also being recognized. Even when you walk to a place, introduce to yourself to the key players. If it's the community and it's their angle you're showing. If it's the KKK and it's another angle you're showing, you might want to introduce yourself slightly less. You take the chance. Fine, you've done that. If you're really serious about reporting, you would have brand new, and if you have the money and you try to squander the money, you have good equipment. I would say, don't buy the cheap $30 mic. Wait, put money aside to get the better mic, one that will last you. Budget is a very important part of long-term preparation, relationship with the community that you want to cover, a budget, equipment. Have it ready. Have your medium ready, your MD, your cassette tape, whatever, a pen, a notebook, an ID, a picture ID. Press credentials are very relevant for street stuff because sometimes it allows you to cut through as opposed to being forced to walk around and miss the story. It saves a lot of times in big city demonstrations.
Can I interrupt for a moment? I actually wanted to know, how do you get a press pass?
I will tell you that in a minute.
Okay.
You can make it. And you can go through the police. Go on. He's a program director. He will tell us. But one way is to really have your outfit create a very nice looking and sturdy piece of something with your picture on it and a few sentences on the back that I will read you in a second. And Oscar is going to tell you the official press release, which makes a whole lot of sense to do if your outfit is going to be covering the World Economic Forum meetings in New York or the IMF or the World Trade Organization or the labor strikers.
And it differs from place to place. And John, you know, you're out in Madison. You can also probably tell us what you do in your town because you work with news people a lot, right? Yeah.
Well, it varies from place to place, but I know that in Santa Barbara, you can go to the sheriff's department and get a press pass from them. I haven't actually done it, but I know you can.
And what they require sometimes, there's a form and you have to file either as a radio station or as a person 2-3 stories that document that indeed you have done blood and guts type of stories if you're applying for a press pass, meaning things that have fires or killings or things like that. And sometimes they only give it if the station is known or things like that. But there's a process. There is also a temporary press pass that they give during big demonstrations, and the requirements are less stringent. Your person, your outfit's ID, that's one. And it should read something along these lines. This card will introduce and identify the person named on the reverse as program producer for such and such and the address of the outfit and a phone number. Please extend to her or him all professional courtesies, privileges, and assistance normally extended to the press. Your cooperation in assisting them in the performance of their duties is really appreciated. Thank you. Signed by the station manager or the program director.
That's from the Pacific official BAI press thing that covers basically all Pacifica station.
What if you're not affiliated with
anyone? Then one of the things you do, as Reem said, you can make it up because there are no really journalists are not regulated in this country. But also what you do is if you're going to cover a story for someone who is going to air that story of yours, is going to carry it, what you do is you go in and get a letter of authorization or a letter of introduction from them, and that can either make sure you get the necessary credential, either from the police if they're issuing credentials, or from the IMC will issue you credentials if you are about doing journalism. But sometimes the letter alone from on the stationery of the news organization will be sufficient to. I shouldn't say news organization. I come out of news a lot, so I say that.
The outfit.
But from the media organization, we'll get.
Sometimes having the IMC ID is a liability. So the second part of preparation is also knowing who you are with respect to the subject matter happening and with respect to the opposition. So sometimes being an independent, it might be better not to have that and to go without this press credential hanging, but with the equipment very visible. When you file stories as an independent or a freelancer, get an email going back and forth, hold that piece so that you can show, gee, look, I've filed for this and that before and I'm a freelancer. And the other piece also, because as you noticed, this one wasn't that visible, people want to be able to see you from far. I made this one and actually gave it to people at WBAI. Your equipment, it makes a whole lot of sense that it's identified. When Errol and I were the first people to scoop Lynn Stewart, the big lawyer who was arrested, kind of a repressive measure, I would say, for all outspoken lawyers. All these different journals and newspapers and TVs took a picture of us. Our mic, we did not have WBAI, you know, colors. And it was silly because it would have been an incredible outreach opportunity. You were going to say something.
I just wanted to add something in terms of press badges. Errol mentioned, you know, Madison, and it's not too bad in Madison. Just south of us, however, if you want to get credentialed through the sheriff's department in Cook County, they require a fingerprint now, which is really ominous, and a lot of people are fighting this. So, yeah, keep in mind it's nice to get the police badge that allows you past the police line, but there can be a downside to it, and never give them your fingerprint.
And also another thing, whether you have the letter of assignment, the letter of introduction, or whatever, even if you're a freelancer, make sure you have ground support. Think of yourself as going to war. Let at least one person, hopefully who's sitting near a telephone, whose number you know you're going out there. And preferably, if you're going to be reporting to an outfit, let the editor or the producer or the program director know you're going to the street. I never go reporting for WBI without WBI officials know. Because when Errol was arrested, Valerie had to be gotten so that she goes and checks on him, because we were advised that his safety, his life safety, depended on this official representation. So they know not to mess up with him. It's very important. When you're a small independent outfit, be friendly to a couple of lawyers. Or if you're covering a movement, they have the legal support, have their number written in a pen that doesn't run away on your hand. And you can have it a bit higher so that it's not that visible necessarily to the police. Remove things from your purse and yourself that aren't relevant to that issue. It will not serve me if I go to cover police brutality or a murder by the cops in New York City to have a flyer that calls with my name as a press contact for a demonstration is against Israel. A colleague of mine got his teeth removed without anesthesia by the INS for having had such a flyer on him, and he wasn't a journalist. So be aware also of what's going on and where you're going into. Having a bodyguard with you is something I recommend for people that I train when we do convergences. What does this mean? I learned it from Lupe, because in Philadelphia, when she saw the police coming on and closing tight and me calling their badges and them grabbing my mic, when I took my telephone to continue the reporting on what was going on after this Mumia rally, she just grabbed me very seriously and became my eyes, and she checked my back. The same way as Errol said, you got to scoop your back. You got to have, it helps if someone else is checking it. And some of the kids of the IMCs came to thank me after the World Economic Forum week to say they felt it saved their life and they didn't get arrested because of that. They doubled. One and the person who's watching can be the producer to see, is this a loudmouth or is this someone really coherent? And let's go interview her, because she really sounds good, while he's busy as a reporter, like talking with someone else. So they can double in that role. It makes sense to dispatch two people rather than one, and only one with equipment. The other piece of preparation is also your clothing. I said it should be comfortable, appropriate to the situation. Definitely have an umbrella on you. If there's any possibility of rain, equipment does get damaged by rain and also by pepper spray. And, you know, you can put the thing to a different direction.
Well, I just wanted to say that one
microphone. They're recording the sucker.
I just wanted to say one thing is attitude, because, you know, my partner Gretchen, she goes to demonstrations and she'll get telephones from you know, CBS News people, and just it's her attitude. She'll go up and say, "Can I borrow your cell phone for a minute?" And they'll give it to her, and she's like going off about what's going on and saying, "I'm reporting from, you know, for this, for IMC or whatever she's reporting for at the time." And they're sitting there staring at her going, "Huh, what is this?" And then she'll conversate with them, and it goes on, and it's really good. And
And I will use my white color skin as a privilege to get as close to where they're arresting the people, the demo, as possible. And I bet you I get much closer than he can. Let's be real. Who we are versus what's going on. When they dropped me off for the Doris Mond funeral, Grayson and Errol were so careful to remind me, though I think I'm black, I'm not on the outside, and that I gotta be careful, and this is the Haitian community, and this is their history. And what happened is, because I've introduced myself before, and because, and that's the most important part, when you're there reporting, tell the truth. Be honest, be integral. And when you bother people to go get their story, put it on the air. Put it on the air. Put it on the air. Because sometimes we come back to our outfit and there is no room for it. Because we didn't take time in the beginning when we got that press release to make sure that there is a producer out there, there is a program director, there is space on the air. And we come back and reality hits. There is no room for it. We arrive too late on this news. Slip in a news brief and say the piece will come tomorrow and change the angle tomorrow so that it gets on the air. It is an imposition on people protesting, organizing, whatever, to take time to tell you their story. Respect them. They'll give it back to you.
And you know, sometimes when you have the story, when you've done a real good job, is when those guys in the suit and tie who get paid the big bucks come up to you to get your information and your sources.
And you will give your sources, of course, if your sources have put their name on a press release and you tell no, thank you, and no, like your mama told you, say no, when they insist for more. I go also dressed corporate to the really heavy demonstrations. I found out that it opens a lot of doors for me. So whatever works for you. We also sent a Chinese young student in one of our classes at the School of Visual Arts in New York City to cover Chinatown after 9/11. No one would speak with her. What turned out to be the case is that she was dressed up in college kids' clothes, which was so much more expensive and clearly from a different class than the working class in Chinatown, that they were very wary of this young person with such good equipment coming to ask them questions. So the relationship, build the relationship and be aware of the relationship and be humble. I say that a lot, but you'd be amazed at how much respect you get when you kneel in front of somebody with the mic up for 2 hours. When you're in a live event and you didn't hook up to the sound system and you're putting your mic up there also, be modest in your body language if you can. Of course, if your knees are bad, you will need a chair, but try to. Have a broomstick if you can, so that you can put it up there and you're not too much in their face. So this respect is something you need to carry with you. And sometimes we forget it when we're on the heat of the moment. And we look at a story and you know the news editor said, if it's 2 minutes after 3, I'm not running it. So it's a juggling act, but keep the respect alive. Because that's what makes our difference between us and the other journalists that are paid the big bucks. Part of equipment, a very good pair of headphones so that you can listen to what you're recording, not what's being said on the mic in the rally. All sorts of different gear to hook up your recording equipment to the sound system. Press conferences have a mult box, which is a multiplexing box that oftentimes is an XLR. By the way, know your wires. We all might be very hotshot reporters. If you're carrying equipment, know it. Know what's the difference between an XLR and an RCA and a quarter inch and a mini and a mono and a stereo. It might make the whole difference between you bring back the sound or you don't. Really listen to what you are recording and also listen to what you don't want to be recorded. And there are miking techniques that will allow you to get some texture behind the person, the drumming, the chanting. And also there's a body language and a methodology by which you walk with the person you're talking so that the sound is behind you and you are facing the person talking, and this way the continuation is just their speech, not so much weighed down by the texture that can become tiring. So again, good mic, external mic to the equipment as often as you can. Equipment with internal mics should have a hole that says mic from the outside. Good headphones, new batteries in your pocket, extra supplies, water. I will repeat, water and energy food if it's a rally for a few hours, because you are human and you will get tired. Be good to your body as well. Be aware of your limitations. If you know you cannot walk for hours, plan not to necessarily walk with the whole rally, but to catch up with it. And layer your clothing in case it's a many hours rally. These are little details that can take you a long distance. Also, talk, like I said, with your colleagues to get more information about the issue. Talk with the program director or whomever is your editor so that your story has space on the air for when you come back. And think about it, if you're really going to spend time for something hard, why should you give it to only one program on your radio? Know your radio. Know the format and the dynamic and the kind of the audience of the different program. So the same rally can be packaged 6, 7, 8 times. Because really to affect change, and I would hope that you're all here to make news, not for the sensation of it, but to affect positive social change, repackage your content in as many ways as possible to give it to as many shows as possible. Because hammering the point is what really makes the news effective.
Oh, sorry. I just want to ask now for some feedback, or if there's an additional suggestion from the group, anything that you think that we should, that you have done, or that you know about, that we should share with one another, or any specific questions you have to ask of us, who will volunteer, or if not, we can go home.
No, we have still, also I want to show you how to cover something like that, and what's the equipment.
Can you talk a little bit about post-coverage and what to do, how to continue the coverage after the events happened?
Okay, so we talk about pre-coverage. Sometimes it's just a matter of a phone call or something that you hear that an event is happening. You scope out the event, you go to the event, and you record it, or you come back with the information as an eyewitness. As Reem is saying, you can do the formal news piece, which is to have actualities, to write copy, and to edit the story together. Or what I find to be very effective, because I do a morning program, and if I go out and cover something at 8 o'clock in the night, I want to tell you that at 10 o'clock, I'm not going to be sitting up editing a story. What you do is on your way home, because the story is fresh, is that you take that tape and you log it. You begin to log it. You go into that tape and you find the one or two or three pieces in it that best illustrate what it is that you found that evening. If you have to make one cut, then you take that one cut and you go with it. Let me tell you a piece that I did that sticks in my mind. There was this young man, his name was Earl Faison, and he was murdered by the police, and I'm using the word very deliberately, murdered by the police in Orange, one of the Oranges in New Jersey. A female cop, black, was murdered by someone, and they started to pick up black male who may or may not have fit the description. I went to the funeral, the service, then I went to the burying ground, and I, you know, when they commit the body to the ground, he's Muslim, they buried it right away, and I got some sound at the backhoe, that was covering up the grave. And I also went and I interviewed his father at the funeral describing what had happened. So I really quickly, the next morning, married the actuality of his father talking with the imam doing the prayer and that sound of the backhoe in the background. It's about 4 minutes. And I ran that on wake up call. And I think for me, I don't know for anyone else, it punctuated and talking about it. One of the last act on this earth was this man being grave being closed, not in the traditional way, but by a backhoe as if he was just another piece to be forgotten. Well, recently or last year, they were convicted, not for murder, but for conspiracy and some other charges, some of these police officers who murdered this young man. It turned out that he had absolutely nothing to do with the killing of this police officer, Joyce Carnegie, in New Jersey. But we were able to get that information out there, and we stayed with that story because it is still an ongoing story in trying to get the conviction reinstated and other things. So these things can have a lifespan. If you watch Democracy Now, a lot of times, because stories get told over and over, or their anniversaries or other things, that you have a file where you keep those things and you whip them out as you need them.
Archiving. By the way, also labeling is a very important point.
Labeling, yes.
I would say you listen to this one. I would really say you listen to this one, Errol. I would even sit there if I were you. You gotta label your material. Because we are here not to do a one-piece, one-shot deal. Exactly like you said, post-production. Some of it is what you do with the material afterwards, how you leave it for later for reuse, and also following up with a phone call for the people. Showing them you care. Yes, what happened afterwards? Did the police find anybody about your missing daughter? Did somebody come out finally to say your son didn't do it? Okay, I hope it's all right. You hear the person's name somewhere else, go to that other event and see. Any news? Take a little couple of more sentences from Mr. Diallo. I know it's been a few years and it's no longer the top news in New York, even though singers are still writing about it when we talk about police brutality. Stick with it in your head, but also your material needs to be retrievable. We are recording 1, 2, 3, 4 stories at least a week. Can you imagine in a month how much material we are? And this is from each reporter. If I didn't insist, everybody writes. What's the event? GRC7. Who recorded it? WJFF or WBIX? Which date? Friday, August 8, 2002. Because in 2003, I will forget what is what. And things can repeat. They can become annual. The time. When this happened, because somebody sometimes comes and says, hey, at 11 o'clock, there was this outbreak in this conference. Did you record it? Such a person made a remark in that workshop. We really need it. If I wrote that the workshop started at 10:30, it's easy to know half an hour afterwards. Where's the material? And it speeds up because we're also sound gatherers, especially when we collect stuff wholesale, which is really one of the thrusts of the sound gatherers and WBIX. In opposition to like just noise bites. So I said again, what is the event, the date, the location? Is it in the Catskills, in New York, in DC, if you move about? And later, if you can write a couple of things like the fourth panel happened this morning, it might help you remember. Yes, I remember it happened in one of these panels at the GRC7. Which one was it? Originally, you had labeled the MD before you put it in that it was reshaping the media. Dropping a note, the fourth panel, on top of the label afterwards might save you a lot of hours of research through your audio. I had much less audio than most of them at Democracy Now! And Wake Up Call. Much, much, much less. Oftentimes in rerun, they would come back to my material because I had my three tapes written very clearly. Another thing also is do an internal tag. read the flyer of the teaching you're going to or the conference into your mic, identify the date, describe the people, and also collect a minute or two of room silence. It can come in really handy if you're doing post-productions. Another thing that's a detail, from all these works that I have done, I'm the most proud of one piece that is 1 minute. It was my coverage of the minority demonstration against the New York Times. And it had 9 components. How the hell I managed to stick 9 components into 1 minute is because I had an MD recorder and a cassette tape, and I kept cutting and pasting between the two so that I captured these 9 pieces that brought in a lot of the stakeholders of the issue, a lot of the organizers of the event, and showed their perspectives in 1 minute. It ran on the news, it ran on Democracy Now!, it ran on other things, and it still would run again whenever we come back to the issue of minorities and media. So sometimes post-production, not to make it elegant, but to make it condense. When we run it raw, there is no way we can put as many thoughts in it as when you cut and paste and remove the proper pieces. And I don't mean removing pieces with lack of integrity. I just mean that sometimes you want the thought from one person and an addition from another, and you can't afford necessarily in small pieces to put every thought of every person and every angle in which they've opened up. So this is regarding post-production. I hope it covers it. One thing we haven't covered enough is also the equipment that is to cover teach-ins and live events. Are you guys interested in that? You want to take a look and a walk? Huh? Oh, sure. So while he's coming,
is the line between journalism and being a propagandist particularly difficult as an indie media reporter? In other words, you'll hear in some interviews someone say something that you wish they hadn't said. It doesn't do the cause justice. It doesn't do the cause well, and you're going to be much more likely to drop that quote than say a reporter who doesn't care. Are those guidelines purely internal? In other words, staying true to your craft as a reporter, or are there organizational guidelines for you to follow as well, like at Pacifica? Thank you.
If somebody says something asinine that has no relevance and no bearing on what it is you're covering or what the main thrust of a demonstration is, You cut it out. You know, if it's live, it's going to go out. It may be something that you want to challenge. If you really want to do the cause some good, you may want to challenge the person on that and let them explain it. And I can go into a situation like that with you, with Reem, and I think I will go into it. It was a demonstration we were covering around one of these killings, and I think it may have been Amadou Diallo killing, and we went out on a Sunday to report, and we were reporting.
No,
live.
It was the jury, the verdict of the
jury.
The jury,
whatever.
Acquitted.
And we were reporting. And we were reporting on it, and there was one guy there who were downing women and downing white people and downing a whole lot of stuff. But it was a genuine expression that he was making that is oftentimes cut out, or oftentimes people in the community don't want to deal with or confront. I felt that it was a genuine sentiment expressed by enough people, even though it wasn't within the mainstream.
Errol and I were on the street
to
feeling
air.
The people's reaction to the verdict and hearing them.
And so she came back with the sound. It was quite a rather long piece. And I told her, cut it. Okay. Cut it. It's good. Cut it here. And she did that at the time, understood what I meant by cut it. So she ran this whole piece, and when it went off,
I understood it means package it.
Yeah, okay.
Not cut it here, as in stop it here.
And so when it went on there, the producer, or the host of the program, cut it. And we miss what came after that because she didn't condense it and it had too many fucks in it, or other languages, as well as the expression.
Let me explain what was long. This young African American man was furious, and he cursed the hell of everybody. And he said that what they really need was a bullet between the ear of every white cop that the community considers is racist. And also talked about how if it were less black women and brother black men on the jury and not people from the suburb, the verdict would have been different. And he had told me to cut it after 1 minute. I had run another minute of it, because that's when he talked about the shooting of the bullet on the head, which a lot of people have been talking about in the street that day, so it wasn't just him. And what was amazing that I kept it for this extra piece also is because the people of the community came and talked with him. And from his rage, they reached together a conclusion that really what's at issue here is much more people need to organize, African Americans need to vote, and together they need to be in these official positions so as to choose a jury and things like that. So it was building crescendo, and his rage that I wanted to show Roe got reclaimed by the community and refocused. Never got there. I had told the producer that it was Frank Lingua. At Pacifica, we had a guideline that we are a radio for peace, not to incite people to go take a gun and shoot people. So there was this issue as well, compiled with the fact that I'm white and he's black, and they all decided he got Mike happy.
Right.
I'm still recovering from that mistake.
Okay. So, again, you got to know how to handle story and be truthful and be honest to what you're seeing and what you're experiencing, because a lot of time what the media will do is that they will take situations out of context and report on it. And that takes me back to a live event in Seattle. We all saw the images in Seattle of people running wild and rampant through the street and destroying properties. Yeah, there were some destruction of property.
Maybe 12 incidents, if I'm not mistaken.
But they were as rampant and as wild as the Boston Tea Party. They were as focused as the Boston Tea Party. For the most part, the incident of the Starbucks coffee shop weren't people stealing coffee or looting coffee. It was people doing an action against a corporation that is exploiting people. And most of that coffee was thrown out in the street. There were a few incidents of a few very targeted store windows that were broken. And there were also some accidental breakage of glass. And yeah, there was also the breakage of a radio shack that may have been looted of a few items, namely cell phones, which are useless if not activated. But that was not what was perceived on the media. So we have to be fair to capturing the full panorama of what happened, but in its proper balance and its proper context. So Seattle does not become and a place where anarchists rampage through the streets and beat people and destroy property wantonly.
But rather that of anarchists building community gardens like in Washington, D.C., helping the community. Anarchists who have a vision of a world that is more equitable and better for everybody, animals and environment included. And another thing is sometimes when we're like recording these street rallies and stuff, we wish the person didn't say there were only 3 people that showed up there. Remember, as a reporter, your guideline is to be true and to empower. That's why you're out there. And sometimes we empower the people that we're trying to empower by bringing to their attention that too few of them walk the distance. So be truthful. And there's the FCC guideline, which are these few words that we cannot say on the air, including fuck, suck, ass.
Ass is not one of them. How about tits?
Okay. I have to review, and yes, I should review, and all of us should review the FCC rules.
I would never say piss cocksucker, motherfucker.
Even on a webcast.
No, it's all right on the webcast. There are it's not regulated.
I try not to use words that would necessarily be offensive to people casually. Like, I won't use the N word. I won't call somebody, a white person, the C word, without having some context in which to do it. Okay. So, you know.
And I will explore.
I won't call a woman the B word. Okay. And on it goes. So it's more than that when you use language. And I will use the common vernacular. But I won't. But I'll try not to get below the level of vulgarity where it becomes scum.
But sometimes some people that you're interviewing might use these words, and sometimes they're poignant. So you got to decide when to beep and when not to. If it's live actuality, it's all right by FCC rules that some of these words were passed. And when we're webcasting, sometimes we are relayed by community radios. And we got an email actually from one of the program director of one of the outfits saying, when we were covering the protest against the International Monetary Fund in Washington, D.C., saying, because one of our reporters, and he was Italian, and he learned his English from cowboy movies, was using the F word every 2 minutes, saying, I'm willing to lose my license if it's necessary for the story, but please expand your vocabulary and think of me on the other hand.
No, was
so
that
as webcasters, because we have relationships with radios, some FCC sensitivity might
right.
be relevant.
Right, our cultural sensitivity to other people's and their issues, not calling people outside of their names, mm-hmm. outside of how they want to be addressed themselves. And that same reporter, I think, went on to report live to us from Palestine.
And you heard him on DD Alex in front of Amy Goodman. Well, actually, yeah, we were, he was someone who worked with us, and we had called him on wake up call at the same time as we called Lebanon. And he was reporting on their peaceful march against the tanks, and then how the tanks came at them and the shooting started, as we were at the same time listening to Lebanon and Lebanon was listening to them, as the people in Lebanon were demonstrating against the United States embassy and doing a sit-in.
And so we ran it, it came into us live on Wake Up Call, because we rarely ever censor anything except Reem. She gets extreme. But then we made the decision to feed it live to Democracy Now!, knowing that it's going on mainstream radio all over the country. But I believe that
he fed it. It is like 5 minutes between Wake Up Call and Democracy Now! And as the music is going up, he set up the ISDN and fed it to Democracy Now! And they open with it. And Amy is amazing. So is Bernard. For the fact of they jump on their feet, they make room for things because they have such an awareness of why they're making this news.
But I believe
and a good trust in their engineers that they let it be.
I believe the news and the fact that it was happening here and now, and this was somebody staring down the barrel of a gun and giving an honest expression to that, was worth sending out nationally and internationally some 15 minutes after it had occurred, or while it was still going on, because it was still in the process of people being shot and shot at. Two Palestinian journalists were shot. They were targeting people who had cameras, and they were shooting at them. One young woman was hit in the stomach.
And the cameraman in the neck.
Yeah, that was worth sending out. And it went out, and I think today, even seeing it last night, it held up.
By the way, as station policy goes, it was interesting to point out to all of you that when we got this email, we sat down, WBIX was webcasting and relaying what the Independent Media Center in Washington, D.C. was doing. We decided to do one stream and one to relay the other rather than two parallel streams. And there were more than 100 more than a hundred, much more than 100, but more than 35 different audio reporters there. And I don't know if you know, but at the IMC, we take decisions by consensus. So we all had to agree together either to drop feeding to radio stations or to try to clean our language as we are reporting. And everybody reached the conclusion of, no, it was important to clean our language because we can be more rich in vocabulary-wise than to use that word. And we went with that. So the process of how these decisions, sometimes it's a group thing, sometimes it's a personal thing. The last piece that I think is relevant for you all is how to cover like a teaching or a workshop. These mics aren't good for such a thing. There are better mics which sit on the floor. They are like this, like this, like this. And we have some of them. I'll show it to you somewhere else. We didn't set sound okay. for here.
May I make a suggestion, given the lateness in that, of the hour that for people who want to review that with you, that you do that?
Right.
And you dismiss the rest.
Right. One more component before dismissing the rest of you is, when you're out there in the community, you represent the station that you're holding. So he is KG, KC, SB, and everything he does reflects on the station, and everything he doesn't do reflects on the station. So you got to be aware of that. And also, it's really intelligent of station manager to have an outreach effort at the same time as they're sending reporters to cover a live event. The community needs to know that you're out there, because this way, first, they will tell you again when they do a similar thing. Second, you were bond to them, which is part of your mission, I do believe. So outreach has to be a very important part, I believe, in live coverage. So whomever is interested in more looking a little bit at the technical details of the gear, I'll take a few minutes to show it to you. For the rest of you, thanks for your patience.
Thank you.
And this is WBIX.org, Voice of the Voiceless, Refugees and Exiles Radio, bringing this workshop to you, covering live events.